young people as clones of our
sense of reality. We want them to have the controllable. And we'll call it education. And it means that we'll take children from their parents at a very early age, and we'll keep them there about 5 days a week at least, all the way through their formative years, and we'll pound them every day with our version of reality.
Burn your history books, kill your TVs. What you're being fed is disease. You are being led to dis-ease. Wake up your consciousness, live free.
Welcome to the Free Your Mind podcast. This is episode number 23. My name is Rahul, and I'm here with my friends Bill and Patty. And today we have a very special guest. He is probably the reason that we started this podcast. I know for me, he really, and I think all of us, really was a catalyst in this show and our own growth and evolution. And he is a researcher, and he is a teacher of natural law. His name is Mark Passio. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Welcome, Mark.
Rahul, Bill, Patty, thank you so much for inviting me onto the show today.
It is so great to have you, man, and thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today. I got to tell you that your information that you have provided on whatonearthishappening.com has been huge, man. I remember listening to your podcasts while I was sitting out on my tractor mowing my field and just nodding and just getting it, man. And knowing that I've been searching for this information for a long time and had a lot of teachers, but the information that you provided really filled in the gaps. And I really want to say thank you from the bottom of my heart, Mark, for doing what you've done in the last few years and putting yourself out there and providing this information and building this masterpiece.
Thank you so much. That's really appreciated from the heart. And I hear that from so many people that the work that I've put out there acted as a tapestry for them to pull a lot of things that, you know, were seemingly disparate pieces of information together to help them make sense of it and to understand, you know, how a lot of these different aspects of our lives, you know, are all kind of related and working together. And that's what I feel What on Earth is Happening was all about. It was something that could, as you say, you know, tie things together for people to help them make sense of things that may have been a little bit confusing for them as they began to discover it in the past. That's what I feel my strength has been, trying to explain the interconnectedness of things. And I think that my teaching style and approach tries to, play to that interconnectedness, to these seemingly disparate pieces of information, which are all interrelated.
Yeah. Well, and it just kind of, and it makes sense. And, you know, some aspects that you brought to the table, I would never have even thought about, you know, and you have a way of putting things that give you an accurate portrayal of what is going on. And when I'll use the polarity example, for instance, where the polarity of control that we see in our society today, and that people think that we need to add more control to that, is akin to saying that, let me put out this fire by throwing some gasoline in it.
Right.
And not understanding the situation is a huge part of the problem, and not even being able to understand. And, you know, that's been engineered, and it's kind of hard to
sure.
wake up to that, especially when you've been duped for a long time.
Sure. A lot of people have fallen prey to the mind control tactic of obfuscation, and they fall in prey to thinking with their emotions, because so much of what the fear-based media is all about is getting people to simply react in a fear-based form of modality of consciousness. And when you do that, you're not really thinking logically, you're not thinking clearly, and you're certainly not understanding what I would call governing dynamics of nature, or what I've simply termed under the umbrella term natural law. People have a hard time understanding these basic polarities of the simple dichotomy that really all of our choices are based in one form or another, fear or love. And if we're choosing through fear and we are trying to take more and more control, what ultimately is created is not order, but exactly the opposite. It's chaos. It's more enslavement, and ultimately it's everything that we look at as bad for ourselves, or what we would call evil, which is the path that humanity is really on now. We're not even in the path to hell. We're in hell, as far as I'm concerned. Anybody that thinks that the current world condition is a tolerable one is completely unconscious, doesn't understand real spirituality. They are what I would call completely asleep. And they don't understand how natural law functions. Conversely, I mean, if your thoughts are of a higher consciousness and they're based in real love, not Hollywood romantic, you know, definitions of love, but if they're based in expansion of consciousness and they're based in really trying to grasp how governing dynamics work in the universe, then you're going to be accepting of truth. You're going to be accepting of an understanding of true morality, not what people think of as being a good person, but an actual good person that understands the real, definitive, objective difference between right behavior and wrong behavior. And then what you're going to be creating outward in society in that state of awareness of rights and sovereignty, you're going to be creating real freedom. You're going to be creating order in society. The problem is so few people do understand these governing dynamics in the aggregate sense that there's not enough of a critical mass of those people to really make a change in society from the path of chaos and evil that we are on and enslavement to push the dynamic in the other direction, which is what the great work ultimately is about. It is about reaching a critical mass of beings such to change or influence a change in their consciousness in a way that will actually accomplish this living in harmony with these natural law governing dynamics, which ultimately govern the consequences of the behaviors that we choose. And it will create a world that is based in real freedom and order, ultimately all the things that we say that we want, or what we would just simply term goodness. We're just unfortunately so far off from that path because of all the mind control programming that is going on in society. People are still just so susceptible to programming that has been, they've been bombarded with for their entire lives. Mm-hmm. And I don't see it relenting. I see it getting actually, you know, harder and harder. I see people giving into it a lot more. I see people who don't even recognize the methodologies that are employed against them. It's another reason why I feel my podcast series is very critical for people to listen to, because I spend a lot of time on the methodologies of mind control that are employed against us by the so-called controllers of the world, the dark occultists, the sorcerers, whatever you want to refer to them as. The people who are ultimately controlling this immoral system of slavery and control right now, the powers that should not be, if you want to refer to them as such. I spent so much time breaking down their methodologies because I was around these people and studied these techniques and understood deeply how they work. And unless you're aware of that, those negative forces, you cannot steel yourself against them. It's like, I liken it to, like, you know, the Star Trek analogy or Star Wars analogy with a ship with its shields either up or down. You know, if the ship has its shields down, the starship has its shields down and it's fired upon, it's going to take heavy damage. And right now, that's what we're seeing in society. We have people who have no psychic self-defense mechanism, no psychic shielding, no spiritual shield, no spiritual suit of armor, if you will. And when the bombardment of mind control programming, you know, is wielded against them, it's just hitting flesh and bone, you know, and it metaphorically, you know, it's hitting the mind hard with absolutely no defenses up. I think that as this attack is ratcheted up, not only in the soft mind control arena through influence, we're seeing electronic forms of mind control. We're seeing radionic weapons being deployed. You know, we're seeing EM fields being ramped up like we have never experienced before. We're seeing attacks in food, attacks in the water supply. You know, much more ramping up of statist government propaganda in mainstream media, and all of these things combine. You know. And the people who haven't been doing the work, who haven't been doing the work upon themselves, they're infinitely more susceptible. They don't have it's like, you know, throwing a medicine ball at someone's stomach who has done no crunches, you know, forever.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to hit them and knock the wind out of them. But if you've been doing 100 crunches a day for the last 5 years and you have really strong muscles and someone tosses a medicine ball at your abdomen, well, it bounces off. And, you know, that's what I kind of see going on in society. I see this very small dynamic of people who are able to just weather the storm. And they're not as susceptible to all of these forms of, you know, mind control and manipulation that are going on. But the vast overwhelming majority, because they've really done very little to zero work upon themselves spiritually, they're getting hit harder and harder and harder, and you know, they're worn down, they're beaten down, and now they're offering very little to no resistance because of how beaten down they are. Yep. Their shields are down, and you know, they're just being fired upon at will at this point, which is why it's so important for people to absorb the information regarding these methodologies and to really get on to strengthening the body, strengthening the mind, you know, really developing psychological and emotional maturity. And, you know, to be quite honest, I mean, I don't want to be a doomsayer or somebody who, you know, just thinks it's hopeless. But in my interactions in socially, just in the last maybe 6 to 8 months, I mean, I really see a drastic, drastic negative difference in society. I know there's a lot of people who talk about a big awakening happening, you know. I just don't see a mass awakening occurring. I see isolated pockets of individuals slowly waking up, and I see, you know, real strong individuals like yourselves starting to get involved in the true great work, which is really inspiring. I think we need tons and tons more people doing what, you know, people like you guys are doing with this podcast and getting involved in the work.
Well, and I think it's important, too, to say that it doesn't have to be a podcast to do the great work.
Sure.
It could be whatever you have intrinsically you have been born with. Some of us are great writers. Some of us are great singers. Some of us are great artists. And
storytellers, musicians.
Absolutely. Yeah. Use what you have, but gear it towards the great work of speaking the truth and teaching what you've learned about how the world really is.
Sure. You know, it's there's so many things that we could be getting involved with, you know, from general activist movements and reaching out to people who are already somewhat caring and active in society, you know, to just talking with family members. That's where it really starts, you know, is it starts at home with just, you know, speaking the truth to people around you, family and friends. So many people are so afraid to do that. You know, but you could get involved in so many efforts, you know, from making a video, you can make a documentary, you could build a website or write a blog, you know, you could make presentations and get local speaking engagements. You know, there's no end to what angle you could approach the great work from. You know, we were talking about this a little bit before the show started. You know, art and music are two huge ways that you can get involved in it. And, you know, I see those as really awakening forces in their own right. I think most of the people who I know who are awake are in one form or another an artist or a musician. And, you know, being a musician is an artist. It is an art form. So, absolutely, you know, art in general is one of the pathways to real awakening.
Isn't that the feminine aspect, right?
Sure.
That has been absent from the world that we see around us. And when was the last time that... you know, you're seeing cops painting a picture on the sidewalk. I don't know, you know, what would be,
well,
so,
yeah.
You know, or when was the last time when you were in the hospital that they brought in, you know, some music for you
sure.
You know, had you paint a picture, or it's a balanced part of our nature that we need to include in order
that's
to
right.
be balanced.
Exactly. It's creating intelligence because it's you're generating something. You're either generating sound, like you're generating a frequency, or you're generating form as a, you know, visual artist. You're generating, and that's also a frequency.
Absolutely.
You know, that's the walling off of that right side of the brain. You know, that they don't want that coming through. Imaginative and intuitive nature. Because, you know, that's a side that's a power, I should say, that children really come into the world with in many respects. And, it could either be nurtured or it could be strangled.
Exactly.
And what the school system in the modern day is doing is strangling and choking that instinct, that power. What we need to do is help nurture that and, you know, be a part of it and step into that. Just to go back to what I was saying regarding what I've been seeing recently in society, I mean, I'm seeing so the opposite of that. I'm seeing people that are just so completely, overwhelmingly obsessed with the existing system,
right.
Obsessed with money, obsessed with their job, their you know, spirit soul killing job,
right.
Just obsessed with having to be on that treadmill and, you know, work harder to get more to go back and, you know, pay
trapped
for this
in,
bill or
trapped
that
in their
bill.
Ego.
Total cycle, you know, a cycle that goes nowhere. They think they're going somewhere and they're going nowhere and they're you know,
spinning
enslaved.
Their tires.
Exactly. And enslaved the whole time, not even recognizing the slavery that they're in, that they're a part of, that they're complicit with.
Like a rat on the wheel.
That's right. And see, this is what being in the world and of the world means. The people who are obsessed with this existing system that take up their role in it, and they you'll never hear them really speaking ill of it.
Uh-huh.
It's just like, oh, this is just what I need to do to survive, get by on a daily basis, get what I need to get, you know, get mine.
They're just a good.
They're never concerned about all the immorality that's going on within that system. They're never concerned with any amounts of the injustice that take place within it. The violence that is inherent to this immoral system that we're living in. They'll never speak to that or pay lip service to that. It's all just about what I need to do for me. And that is what satanic thinking is. I mean,
uh-huh.
I can't put any better of a word on that way of thinking than Satanism. And there's going to be tons of people who will refuse to acknowledge or accept that definition. I tell people all the time, if you wanted a good definition of what Christianity was, you would probably go to a Christian priest. If you wanted a good definition of what Judaism was, you would probably go to a Jewish rabbi, etc. Okay? I used to be a member of Satanism as a religion. I was a priest within a satanic organization that practiced the ideology of Satanism. So when I say this is what Satanism is, I'm talking from a position of inside firsthand knowledge. And what Satanism actually is truly not caring about anything but yourself or your own selfish fulfillment of your selfish desires. That's what Satanism is. And then when we apply that definition to where is the mindset of society, it's very easy to see that most people are behaving in a mindset that is satanic in its nature. And as long as people are in that satanic mindset of, all I really care about is me, I don't care about how this affects anybody else, I don't care if there's violence or slavery inherent to the system that I'm advocating or not speaking up against. You know, you don't even have to be really advocating it. If you're not opposing it, you're complicit with it.
Silence is consent, folks. Silence is consent. We talked about this in a previous episode. It's called acquiescing. And just like if I were to say to Rahul, I'm going to come over and smack you in the back of the head in 2 minutes. And if he didn't say anything, and I walked over in 2 minutes and smacked him in the back of the head, his silence was that consent. He knew what was coming down the line. We have to speak up. We have to start acting. To know and not to act is not to care.
Yeah. That's right. That's exactly right.
Uh-huh. And people who go along with the system, they're just they're good farm animals.
Yeah.
They're good slaves, but it's a giant worldwide open air farm / prison.
Well, and just like the what's that book? What we were talking about, the book, the Marxist book with the farm.
Animal Farm?
Yeah, Animal Farm. So just like in Animal Farm, it's a great allegory for what we're dealing with. Is like they say, and it happens to be the pigs.
Right.
That they say that some people, what do they say? Some people are equal, or we're all equal, but some people are more
equal than others.
Yeah.
That's absolutely right. Yep. And it's the pigs, and I think that's a very interesting and very fitting to what we see around us, and
without question, you know, this idea of the people that we're referring to are in the world and of the world. Their mindset is of this world and of this system. It's all they really focus on day in and day out. When we start to awaken, truly awaken, and understand the inherent illegitimacy of the system we're living in, the inherent violence that is contained within it, the slavery that it produces, you know, we still are going to be in the world. There is no, you know, way of removing yourself. You know, I tell people who try to make the statement, well, if you don't like the system, go live in the wilderness or go live in the woods. Screw you. Who the hell are you to tell me to separate completely from society and go live someplace by myself?
That's right.
Amen, brother.
Yeah,
because I'm asking questions.
I mean, imagine the hubris of somebody like that. Like, no, how about you move, okay? Because you're the one who is advocating the legitimacy of violence and slavery. So if anybody should go somewhere else, it's people like that.
Yeah.
You know? But you have to be in the world. You know, you have to operate and do the work within the world. This is what real spirituality about being of spirit, but in the flesh, doing the work of spirit in the flesh. You're in the world, but you're not of the world. You recognize the true spiritual nature of a human being, and you recognize how far off of the path of natural law that we are, and you recognize that the work that we need to do on the ground, in the here and now, on earth, okay, is done in the world. So you have to be in the world, but your thoughts have to be not of the world, meaning don't be obsessed and focused on this system. Don't be, you know, trying to just, you know, keep up and accumulate and, you know, just all about survival. You know, this is what I just see out there so often, just talking to people. Their thoughts are only about themselves. Service to self, service to self, service to self, over and over again, 24 hours a day. Yeah. You know, and you try to just ask them, you know, can't you even step outside of that thinking for a minute? You know,
and they're afraid.
I think total fear.
They're scared out of their minds, literally, man.
Yep. They're afraid of what it would be to live without this system in place. I just recently talked to a very unconscious person who will remain unnamed that said, this is the best system that humanity has ever come up with. Mm. And I just, you know, I almost fell off my chair sitting down, you know. It's just like, really? You can make that statement with a straight face?
Yeah.
You know, cannot comprehend the amount of slavery that humanity is already in. Cannot understand the total violence that people are threatened with on a day-to-day basis if they don't comply with the immoral system that we're living in. You know, and was just so fearful. I said, your thoughts are just 100% totally based in the fear of, but what if?
That's exactly.
What if this wasn't in place? What if this measure wasn't in place? What if we didn't have these people to do this and that and that?
Yep.
And I'm trying to say, what are you so afraid of? You're afraid that people might have to be responsible for themselves is the real answer. You know, and this person didn't want to hear that answer. Oh, no, it isn't that. Yes, it is that. Anybody who wants this system to continue is afraid of one thing: personal responsibility. Personal responsibility to take care of yourself, and personal responsibility to understand the difference between right and wrong behavior, to the extent that your actions are not aggressing upon someone else and taking their rights, property, or lives, which you don't have the right to take.
That's,
you know,
right.
And he was trying to say, you're advocating for a harsh, immoral world because, oh, all of these measures of trying to take care of this person and that person and that person won't be in place anymore. I said, no, what you're advocating is a harsh, immoral world because taking care of people in a forced way like that, saying that you must do it, takes free will and choice out of the equation. You can't legislate that kind of morality anyway. And how you do it is at the point of weaponry. People
right.
don't understand. That's ultimately how taxation works. Right.
That's right.
It's done through violence. And I said, so you are actually the violent one. I'm the peaceful one. I'm the one who was saying, I don't want violence exercised against anybody else, even if it means some people remain selfish and refuse to share with other people.
Uh-huh.
You know, I would rather it be like that than say, you must do this, you know? And again, you can get into the argument that certain, you know, accumulations of resources to hold them back from others who do require them for, you know, the sustenance of life, that's not a right either. You know, there are forms of what we consider property in the world today that isn't a legitimate form of property. But then you have people that take it to such an extreme that they think there is no such thing as property, which is equally as dangerous a proposition as saying, well, one person can own all the water on the earth.
Right.
You know,
right.
one it's
exactly.
one extreme to the other.
Or
you know,
technology on the earth that we can take this technology that might show us a different form of what's possible. Like
sure.
anti-gravitational propulsional technology, free energy, all this stuff. Imagine we didn't have to be constrained by these electric companies. Imagine we didn't have to give the petrol dollar, and that's our lifeblood that we're taking. Well, it's the blood that we're taking from the earth that we're
sure.
using to fulfill the needs that we
uh-huh.
are here. And then imagine sure. That we didn't even need to drive around, that we could, you know, fly around. It's just, imagine a different form of what's possible, but that there's
exactly.
that word again.
What that would free people up to do.
That's,
you know,
right.
the containment of energy, you know,
yeah.
the restriction of energy freely to people. You know, if we had free energy, the whole control system would ultimately collapse, because that's how they ultimately control people, is through this fear of scarcity, of not having, of the lack of the energy that they need on a day-to-day basis to live and survive.
Right.
You know,
precisely.
And that's what they have people, you know, spending their whole lives on that treadmill, you know, just running around in that giant hamster wheel, as you said, to try to pay their bills and meet the minimum necessities of life, all the while never working upon their mind, never working upon their soul, never increasing again that spiritual psychic self-defense to steel themselves against the mind control, because their mind is always in a lower vibratory state of just survival, just survive, me, service to self only. You know, this is what people need to come out of. They have to understand that is Satanism.
Yep.
That is satanic thinking. And by that definition, 99% of the world are Satanists at a low level.
Well, and then take the inverse of that and look at the global elite and how they live.
Sure.
And how much time do they have to sit together to and mastermind?
Yep.
And more systems of control and how to steer the cattle.
Well, yep. They do it through. They basically own everything. They own, and they have trillions of dollars. When you look at that in just economic, you know, terms, they have more money than a person could ever spend. They just that numeric value just represents their control, their like total control of the resources of the earth, which is not possible without this like coercive systems of government. It's only possible to have trillions of dollars if you're the one who is like printing the money and telling people that they may not trade with any other denomination other than your money,
right?
And then you're charging them interest on it when, you know, people could be trading for precious metals, people could be their new cryptocurrencies coming out
of currency, right?
Mm-hmm.
But see, what we have now is a forced fiat currency.
Exactly.
System. Right.
Well, and it's a violent fiat currency.
Exactly. And it's fraudulent. It's based on fraud anyway, you know, because the resources that allegedly back it don't exist, and they're charging interest on nothing, you know, and that's how they continue to increase their power and influence over others, you know, and then seizing real world physical liquid assets that, you know, they don't have the right legitimately to take.
All the gold, all the silver,
and
all the
property,
land.
Belly laughing the whole way, man, you know, and thinking that people are, what do they call, the unbegun or the dead?
Sure. That's what the dark occultists I worked with in the past only ever referred to the average everyday person as the dead. That's what they called them. You know, and, you know, it's like that's what you see in these zombie movies, you know, The Walking Dead. You know, it's people who don't think, don't feel, don't act. For all intents and purposes, since those are the three expressions of consciousness, thoughts, emotions, and actions, they're dead. They're unconscious. They're not activated on any of those levels of consciousness. And therefore, they consider them non-entities. They consider them, you know, not even, you know, spirits that are actually alive and, you know, have any life essence in them. Hence, they call them the dead.
Yeah, I think Bill went off for a second to take care of the dogs, but
oh, no worries.
The level of comfort and security that this fear-based system creates for us, I mean, it's trapping people. And when you add that to the dead food we're ingesting,
right,
the dead mind programming television that we're taking in, you know, and then what do they do with all of this? They give us this little solution, like, oh, here's the little box you can live in.
Right.
And this is the hamster wheel. You're going to keep this system running by, you know, doing this continual work for what? And no one takes the time to look at what they're actually doing and what is the purpose of it all.
What are they even getting out of it? Like, I ask people, what are you getting that is valuable to you? What? Just a physical roof over your head? Just the ability to put some food on the table for the day or the week, you know, as if like those basic survival mechanisms are worth what they're actually doing to their soul, not to mention what many of them are doing to other people through the immoral nature of a lot of the jobs that they perform.
Right.
You know, not everybody's doing something immoral for a paycheck, but many, many people are.
Yeah.
You know,
well, and they make up the system of control. You know, and by acting, even though you don't do a day-to-day basis, you know, but by filling that role, you're enabling and making this institution of control function.
Well, every single person who works for the government right there is just parasiting money from people who are producing that wealth and actually exchanging their labor or their time or whatever for a service or a product or in the private sector. And when you think about how many government employees there are, and there's like approximately 1 million police officers in America, So
121 million. 121
million?
No, 121,000. I thought it was
I'm pretty sure it's like 900,000.
Well, let's find out. We live in the age of information.
It has to be close to 1 million. I would say it's probably in the hundreds of thousands.
I think it's approximately 900,000 police officers in America.
That sounds more akin to what I would probably think that that number is.
765,000. Wait. State and local law enforcement employ more than 1.1 million persons full-time.
When you combine them, right.
And then 765,000 sworn professional. And those are defined as those with general arrest powers.
So, I mean, when you just think about that, how many Americans are there in America? Like 350 million, something like that. I mean,
all are followers.
So that's like about 1/3 of 1% of the entirety of the population.
Now, if you want to look at it from a perspective of that, ultimately those people's minds are satanic.
Exactly.
These are Satanists who don't know that they're Satanists. So then look at the percentage of people who are actually Satanists in America. Hmm. And you see it's, you know, a huge number, actually. You know, they're not the conscious dark occultists, of course. Uh-huh. They're just their minions that are just going along, you know, to get a paycheck and going along for their, you know, petty sense of power that they lack otherwise in their lives. Because they are ultimately self-loathing and hate themselves, you know, as are all order followers. You know, every member of the Soviet Union, every member of, you know, communist China, every member of Nazi Germany, you know, all of them were self-loathing individuals. Not one of those people who did anything like they did could possibly love themselves. They were all just self-loathing, immoral human beings. And, you know, people want to say, oh, no, it was just the leadership that somehow, you know, took the minds of these people. It's so letting people off the hook way, way too easy. You know, people never bring in moral culpability into the picture. Like, who's more deserving of blame? You know, who's more deserving of, you know, being held responsible for the harm that they caused to others? The person who gave an order or the person who carried it out and actually physically did that action to somebody else? Of course, it's always the order follower that deserves more moral that has more moral culpability and is more deserving of blame for the commission of, you know, wrongdoings that harmed other people.
Well, if we just
and people don't want to accept that.
We just had the order giver without the order follower, then it wouldn't be done.
Nothing would happen, right? You just have a crazy person barking out orders.
That's right. Yeah. That's right, and that's exactly what I was telling Rahul. Is that the worst thing I want to do? You know, it's just barking out or controlling anybody. And, you know, it just trips me out. And that's one of the reasons why meeting Jay Parker and hearing his first episode on your show was a big catalyst for me because I'm like, oh, my God, there's people that enjoy this shit. And because I can't fathom it, and because I also work with behavior, and it's natural for human beings, because I'm a dog trainer, and so I'm always telling people to quit anthropomorphizing the dog, to quit putting people characteristics on this animal. We have a different part of our brain that allows us a lot more capabilities with our mind that this animal doesn't have, and so we need to become the animal by proxy instead of putting that human attributes on top of that animal.
Sure.
And what was I talking about before? I lost my
how much these people love this system. I mean, this is what I'm seeing also all over in society too. These people are attached, viciously attached, you know, clinging on to it with both hands for dear life, saying you're going to pry this from my dead hands, you know, because they so don't know anything else. Well, that's how ignorant they are. They absolutely cannot envision. They don't have imagination. Imagination is deadened within them. You know, it's like kind of like the question and answer session I did with Ivan from Phoenix from Free Your Mind, Arizona.
Yeah.
Talking to the statist, you know, that woman doesn't have any imagination. The imagination is so stifled that she cannot picture anything being different than how it already is.
Right.
And that's how most of these people are. And therefore, they become desperate clingers to what they know. They can't open their mind a little bit, can't envision anything different, can't see a way out of how things are now. And therefore, they say, what it really is, folks, is Stockholm Syndrome. That's what we're experiencing as a nation and really as a planet.
Wow.
We are identifying with the system of our own enslavement, propping up that system of enslavement on a pedestal and saying, this is our God. It gives me my comfortable pen. It gives me the little shack that I'm allowed to live in as the slave who is, you know, doing all the labor and then having the product of my labor confiscated from me at the point of a weapon, you know? And I should love it because it makes my survival possible. I love this system because somehow this system is providing just enough energy for me to survive.
I'm comfortable.
Provided that I do what it demands of me.
Yeah.
Right. Perfect slaves.
Well, and moving from discomfort to comfort, you know, we're going to have to go to discomfort to figure out something else. And people don't want to do that. And we have so much technology that enables us to do so many more things, and you know
they don't want to rip that Band-Aid off.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
Wow,
that's what it is.
Exactly,
and you know, taking it off very quickly, as we know, clearly creates less trauma than taking it off very, very slowly. You know, and unfortunately, it looks like this is the road that humanity has picked, the path of maximum torture. You know, unfortunately, and again, only a self-loathing species would do that. This is the psychic underlying psychological condition of humanity, is that we hate ourselves. Humanity is a self-loathing species. Until we develop true self-love and recognize we are worthy of infinitely more than what we have now, we are worthy of moving beyond this immoral system of enslavement. You know, we deserve that. Most people will say, no, I don't deserve that. And see, my problem is less that people are in that state of self-loathing. My problem is that, quite unfortunately, the people who do truly love themselves, the people who are truly awakened, the people who do truly understand real spirituality and do care about themselves, do care about their own freedom and the freedom of others, are unfortunately being completely bound by the people who hate themselves and hate other people and don't care about their own freedom or the freedom of anybody else and love this immoral system. And again, that's not a right. To advocate for a system that holds other people back, to advocate for a system that enslaves other people, is not a right. You know, we were talking about this a little bit before the show. There are thoughts that individuals do not possess the right to think. People will think that thinking whatever you want is an absolute. It is not an absolute right. There are thoughts that if you think them and hold them as ideas that you will use to back up other people's actions, okay, that are violent toward others, that those thoughts themselves are not a right. Naturally, inherently, in the universe, they do not exist as rights. Those very thoughts are wrongdoings because, again, the first hermetic principle or the first principle that underlies natural law is everything is ultimately a mental construct before it ever comes into the realm of physical manifestation. This is called the law of mentalism. Everything must exist first in mind before coming into physical form. Anything that gets created first existed as a thought. Well, slavery is created. It had to exist as a thought. If slavery is not a right, the thoughts that created slavery were not rights. You know, this is something that people have to deeply understand and contemplate and really realize that there are – you can commit violence just by what you think, because by advocating a behavior, it's – ultimately manifesting that down the line in a future time, you know? So in the moment, you can actually be creating violence with your thoughts. And those things are not rights. Those thoughts are not rights.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of what I tried to explain to people in the Order Followers presentation that I gave at Free Your Mind 3. All order followers are bad people. All statists are bad people. There is no such thing as an order follower or a statist that is a truly moral good human being. Does not exist, never has existed in the history of the universe, never will exist for as long as the universe exists.
It's a contradiction. It's a walking contradiction. It's not true. Yeah. It's
right.
They're saying one thing and walking another thing. You know,
right. Never will be true.
Absolutely.
Now, that doesn't mean that all anarchists are good people. Somebody could advocate for real anarchy and still do bad actions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But what it does mean is that all the people who are actually good people must be anarchists. Yes. Only anarchists comprise truly good human beings.
Well, look at the words. So we have monarchy, you know, which is one ruler, right?
Correct.
And then we have oligarchy, which is
a few.
That's right. And then what's anarchy?
No rulers.
That's exactly what it is. No rulers, no masters.
Not no rules, which is what people get it all twisted and confused and think that it means.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean no rules. There's no such thing as no rules. There is no such condition as the absence of rules. Natural law is always in effect whether you like it or not, understand it or not, accept it or not.
That's right.
Therefore, you cannot have a condition of no rules.
Right.
You could have a condition of no man's laws, but you cannot have a condition of no natural laws. It's not possible. Cannot be done in nature.
And yet
humans have been programmed to equate anarchy with chaos.
Of course.
And I was just having a discussion with someone the other day about explaining to them that I am an anarchist, and they're like, "Well, there'd be chaos if there,
right? Yeah,
if there was
all, as anarchy, if there's not chaos now with
exactly.
all these man-made
laws." That's what I specifically pointed out. I'm like, "So you're saying right now, with government in place, there is no chaos?" And obviously, there is. So it is deep.
Wow, look at that! I just pulled up Webster's Dictionary of Anarchy. Okay. And well, look at the full though. Okay, but hold on. This is the definition without any other terms underneath it. So anarchy, a situation of confusion and wild behavior in which the people of a country, group, organization, etc., are not controlled by rules or laws.
Anarchists are confused.
That's Webster. That is Webster.
Imagine that they have actually made that the
put
definition
that in
of anarchy.
Dictionary.
Okay, so now let's look back.
That's deplorable.
Let's look back at the full definition of anarchy, okay? One, absence of government. Two, a state of lawlessness. There we go again.
No such thing.
A utopian society of individuals who enjoy complete freedom without government.
Yes.
They put the utopia word in there too.
Oh, everything would be 100% perfect. There would be absolutely no suffering ever.
Right. And then number two.
Nobody would ever do anything wrong. No one would ever make a mistake.
Well, absence of or denial of any authority of or established order.
Oh, right. It means there cannot be order.
Yeah.
That's right.
Wow, man. Total mind control definitions that have nothing to do with the real meaning of the word.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Well, and
this is an online dictionary, too. And I'm sure that if we looked at dictionaries from, 100 years ago, we would get a much different, or even 200 years ago.
Well, we just walked through the definition of it before we went and looked at it. It's just interesting that's what they would choose to place in there. And then even Richard Grove talks about in Peace Revolution how there were encyclopedias that were available to the population, and then there were encyclopedias that were available to the global elite. And they had a totally different curriculum involved with them. And if you were to go find these encyclopedias, they're like $20,000-$30,000 even today to get your hands on some of these books.
See, I love how they equate anarchy with immorality in these definitions, when in fact anarchy is the only state of morality.
Exactly.
Now, another thing I want to address regarding anarchy and the label anarchists, I'm just highly sick and tired of people that don't want to use this word. I can't understand why people would not want to be quote-unquote labeled an anarchist. I wear that label as a badge of honor and pride. I want to be known as an anarchist.
Well,
I want to accept the very definition as part of my makeup as a being, because it means I'm a moral being. It means that I understand the real difference between right and wrong behavior. It means that I do not legitimize authority and government and violence and slavery. You know, I don't give any legitimacy to those things because they don't have any legitimacy.
Right.
You know, like, I don't understand why people would so vehemently reject this quote unquote label. You know, look, I get the whole thing of, I don't want to be confined into saying I'm this or that or that. You know, I'm not my job. I'm not what I do. I get that. Okay. Somebody, look, if somebody wants to call me a teacher of spirituality, right, I'm going to accept that as a description of what I do. That's part of what I do. That doesn't mean it's the totality of everything that I am.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I consider myself a teacher. I consider myself a researcher. I consider myself an activist. I consider myself a talk show host. I consider myself a musician. I consider myself, you know, a whole lot of things in the world. I consider myself an anarchist. I mean, it doesn't mean that you have to be completely limited by that word. It just means it's one of the things that describes what you're about. I don't understand why people can't just look at it like that instead of trying to shun it, you know, and say, oh, I don't want to use that as a label or a term. Like, whatever.
I don't look at it as limiting me. I think being an anarchist is something that frees me.
Yes.
It puts me out there and says, hey, I am going to live on this planet without anyone telling me what to do. Man has no authority over me. Only nature does, and I live within the confines of what natural law provides.
That's it.
Well,
you know, and that's something we should be proud of when you understand that that definition that you just so eloquently put out there is what anarchy is about. That's what it is.
Yeah.
You know? And I think people should stop fearing the word, and they should embrace it and just say, yes, this is what I am. You know, I am an anarchist. You know, I don't have to just say I am and stop after that, you know, and say I can't embrace this term or label as a part of what I am. It's a part of what I am. You're not going to describe the totality of any person in a few words. But for me to say I'm not an anarchist or I don't want to be labeled as an anarchist would be untrue and incorrect. It wouldn't be an accurate description on me because that's exactly one of the things that I am. So, you know, I just wanted to throw that out there because I just see this being thrown around out there with, you know, a lot of people. And I just think that they just need to get over themselves in many ways, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I think that there's factions that consider themselves anarchists that are far from it.
That's right.
That's true.
And that's the co-opting of that, you know? And so you're absolutely right. We need to retake back that term and stand proud with it because it is
exactly,
what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It really is. That's why I kind of consider myself a natural law anarchist. I like that term. If you want to throw a term in front of anarchist, you know, you have the anarcho-communists. You know, that's exactly. Like saying I'm a freedom slaveryist. it's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
It's
ridiculous in many respects is I'm an anarcho-capitalist. Let's attack both sides here if we're going to attack one.
Right.
You know, it's like a monetary system is a system of enslavement, no matter how honest it may start out to be, no matter how much you want to try to base it on some kind of equity of exchange of value, it's ultimately going to disintegrate and descend into a system of complete, you know, inequality among people and some people like basically ruling over others because they've acquired all the wealth within the system. That's the whole concept of a monopoly. You know, it's like, okay, I understand we don't even have real capitalism. I get the concept of what real capitalism is versus crony capitalism. But all money is an illusory form of control. It's all a control system. So to say anarcho-capitalist is also saying I'm a freedom slavery supporter.
Yep.
You know, neither one of these makes sense. Where the middle ground is, or where the center path is between these two seemingly opposite extremes that just both lead to enslavement of humanity, the real form of anarchy is natural law anarchy, or what I would simply call moral anarchy.
Wow. Yeah.
Natural law, morality, anarchy. You know, that's the real anarchy. You know, none of these other forms of anarchy are legitimate. So I would call voluntarism natural law morality. Yeah. I would say that it is the closest form of, quote, real anarchy, is being a voluntarist, you know, refusing to advocate for any form of coercion over other people or any form of authority over other people. That's what voluntarism is. My label for it, if you wanted to like just coin a term for it, is natural law anarchy. You know, I've described it in my past presentations as cooperative spiritual anarchy, where we are actually working together from a higher perspective, a higher spiritual level of consciousness, in the recognition that ultimately we are all one family living here on this planet. And what we do for the best interests of one is done for the best interests of all. What we do for the best interests of all is done for the best interests of one. There has to be that dynamic feedback and balance involved, and it has to be done from a perspective of the true knowledge of the difference between right and wrong behavior, or in other words, conscience, common sense knowledge that unfortunately isn't common to the people of the world. It's completely lacking. We've lost our common sense. You know, I was just in a discussion with, you know, one of these statists advocating for taxation, you know, and, you know, I just said, can you even tell me what the definition of a right is? You know, and just standing there, you know, totally silent, cannot define what a right is. Yet you want to say that somehow somebody can magically acquire a right to go and do something that no individual possesses, you know? So this is the myth of authority. This is the religion. It's like in my Order Followers presentation at Free Your Mind, I played a video where a state, a federal senator is trying to say that while no individual can tax another individual, individuals can come together, decide that there is such a right as taxing individuals, and they can grant that power, which they didn't have in the first place as individuals, collectively as a group to another collective called a government, and then they can go out and do that immoral behavior because this group of people all got together and agreed that an immoral behavior can suddenly become a right.
Right.
That's right. Well, and do you want, let me tell you what Webster has done with the word right now.
Okay.
Morally or socially correct or acceptable.
So, yeah, not socially. See, that's where they throw the definition.
They put that in there.
Yep, that's right. That's
moral correct is the correct answer of what a right is, because a right is an action. See, they don't even get – see, they say it's behavior, and that's true. So I would just define a right as an action. You know, it's a behavior or an action taken by a person that – does not cause harm to another and therefore falls within the parameters of moral behavior. Right. That's what a right is. And 99.999% of people in the world cannot define what a right is. They cannot give you the correct definition of that word.
Or when you press them for it, they say to you, whose morals?
Exactly.
And you're like,
and angry at you for even saying that there is such a thing as objective morality or rights.
Right.
Here's why humanity is losing all of its rights. How can you possibly protect something that you don't even understand you have? You can't even define it, you know? That's like not knowing you have a possession, and when you get robbed of it, you're not even going to know it's gone. That's where we're at.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and that's where they say ignorance is bliss, baby. You know, and that's where they want that to be a catchphrase. And that's where that idiocracy culture comes in. And you go and talk to – I mean, I can't even look at these videos that they do where they interview the general public on basic facts of what everybody should know. And – I mean, who our president is, or
yeah.
I mean, who the vice president, I don't know. I mean, even though it's in the corrupt system, it's something that we need to know what's going on around us. And it just, it doesn't give me too much hope at all. You know,
it's really amazing the level of ignorance. And a lot of these people, they're so inundated and indoctrinated by cultural Marxism, you know, and they're so inundated by all of this, you know, total propaganda put out by the media. They believe they're informed in many ways, You know,
well, just like that lady with you.
This system, they love the system. They love the system. They think they're informed. They think they know. They think they understand what's going on, and they're all too ready to look at somebody who actually is really truly informed and say, "You don't know what you're talking about."
Yeah.
Well, and they're like, you know, what gets me is because of my family, you know, and that's who. And you're right, Mark, because I mean, one, they're safe because we know them. We know we love them, and we know they're not going anywhere because they're our family. But and there's a few dynamics to this that I want to speak on, but the first one is we want to approach them, and we're planning on that approach. And so usually we have information, evidence to back up what we're saying, so we don't have to, we can rely on that. And then they don't even look at that. And then the next when you're talking about something else, they're like, man, how do you know all this stuff? You're so smart. And then when you go try to tell them about this, they're like, oh, yeah, you're so smart about everything but that. And you know, and then the other thing is that, and Patty's living this too, you know, is that we want them because we see once we're awakened to the methods of control and manipulation that are present in this world, we want to wake up the people that we love to it.
Yeah.
And it's not even, I mean, they don't even want it. And then they'll lash out at you. And then we have that parental abandonment issue that maybe we can have you on another show and talk about, where we are growing up. And I compare it when I'm talking to these people that are in their 60s and 70s sometimes to kids, to like your response to me was just childish. It's like, we're not adults here. This is weird to me, you know. And then we have, so that tells me that they've had some type of abandonment or haven't been raised in a way that's going to give them a responsibility, your ability to respond to a given situation.
Some things interfered with their development.
That's right. Well, and then when we
stop them at the child stage
and try to introduce them to this new information, then a lot of times we face that abandonment back.
Sure. You know,
where they're going to abandon us and abandon that information and go back to that TV and watch that 5 hours of TV. The average adult watches 5 hours of TV in America. And that's a poisoned worldview that's being pumped out.
And training their frequency.
Well, and it's training them to be parrots, you know. And not only that, but you believe these people that you have never met that get all coiffed up so they can be on a camera that are vain, that want to be in front of an audience, and you believe them over your own son, you know. And that's what's heartbreaking to me, you know. It's like, look, it's and not only that, but you know, the loved ones all around you. And so this is hard to walk, and I think that's why it's so important to have a network of like-minded individuals. And that's why I'm so thankful about Free Your Mind Conference. And real quick, you weren't you one of the founders, or you were the guy that started the conference?
Yes, I was the main founder of the Free Your Mind Conference, and started it back in, really, I came up with the idea, I believe it was around late 2009, early 2010 maybe, but around late 2009, I think. And I put together a local group of really committed, dedicated individuals. And we had the first conference in 2011, and it's, you know, since grown into a much bigger event. And, you know, just really happy with the direction that it has taken. And, you know, so many just brilliant and beautiful people were at Free Your Mind 3. I can't imagine how much bigger it's going to get in the future. I'm just, you know, really glad to be a part of it, and, you know, glad to see it, you know, take on a bigger life of its own, you know. And see that, you know, I started it and nurtured it at the beginning, with a committed team of individuals who are willing to help and put their dedication and effort into the project, and, you know, just kind of see it blossom from there.
Yeah, well, and this is a result of that, man. You know, we're talking to you, and like I said to Janice Barcella, we're riding the ripple effect of that idea,
right,
that
exactly.
You had, man, and that was 6 years ago. I can't wait to see what the ripple effect from what we're doing today is going to look like in 6 years from now.
Right.
But that's up to the listeners, and
right.
If you're hearing this, act. Start something. Start talking. Start the conversation. start asking questions and start pointing to the directions of where people can find this information. Mark has built a wealth of information, but you have to start from the beginning because there's so much and it's got to be kind of stepped up. You can't start from the middle and expect.
Yeah,
you know? Could you imagine, man?
Just
having all this stuff thrown at you, and I could see the cognitive dissonance. But
it's why it's very difficult for beginners to even break into this information. Again, initiation, beginning—that's the hardest part of. Any system of knowledge or system of transformation. And knowledge is the great transformer of the human soul. This is what people within really the whole New Age community need to understand. There's such a de-emphasis on knowledge in that community. They want people to think you could become an enlightened being and not really know anything. You know, that's the big danger of the whole New Age community and movement.
Exactly.
You know, knowledge is what transforms a human being. Nothing else.
Well, you know, Mark, you say initiation, and actually we were talking about that a little bit before the show started. When I found your work, I was listening to probably between 3 or 4 podcasts a day, just going through it, because I found it so, so valuable to me. And the part that I found the most valuable was the initiation into the occult material. And initiation process, really, it's like starting a lifelong study. And I've since then read numerous occult books, and I'm like continuously studying them. And I started with the Kybalion, and then the Stellar Man, and then the Secret Teachings of All Ages, and then it got into the Golden Dawn by Israel Regardi, and now I'm working on Isis Unveiled and reading the Middle Pillar by Israel Regardi. And I'm reading this information, and I'm thinking to myself, this is, you know, some of the most powerful information that I've ever read. And I feel like if we taught this to our children, like if you know, in their formative years, in their elementary school and high school years, children were learning this information from an early age, we would be at a completely different, everything would just be completely, the entire world would look completely different.
Right.
Yeah. And it starts with imagination. Just like you said, we have to imagine a different form of what's possible. And that comes with knowledge too. You have to know where we've been, and if we don't know the past, we're bound to repeat it. And the other thing that I want, that really, really stands out to me, is a quote that I absolutely love, and it's, secrecy is the enemy of healing.
Exactly. That's why this knowledge has to be de-occulted. It has to be taken out of hiding, taken out of secrecy. And until it's made common sense knowledge, I keep telling people, don't expect anything to change. But how many people even know it or are communicating it? You know, I mean, how many people are aware of natural law? How many people are aware of what a right is? How many people are aware of the objective laws of morality? There are people who will fight you tooth and nail to the day they die that insist that there's no such thing as an objective right. You know, they think these are things we just get to make up, and they can change at will, at whim. Oh, we say that this is acceptable here in this jurisdiction, you know, which means to say what the law is, to say what rights are or not. Oh, you could do this behavior here then. Oh, if we say now it's illegal, now you could be punished by it. Well, you know, just either the action harms somebody or didn't. You know, that's the measure for whether something is a wrongdoing or a right. And people still can't grasp that simple concept.
And that is solipsism.
Right. It's saying reality is what I make it. Well, not what it actually is, but what I want it to be or what I make it.
Michael Tesserion says that this information is sacred and it should be saved for those that are willing to accept it. Otherwise, you're wasting it, you know, and that's what I remember. I can't remember where I heard him say that, but it was profound when I heard it because I was so frustrated from trying to be adamant. Sure. And sometimes you have to back up and realize that, and that's another conversation, but some people, just like in a flock of birds, we have the 10 to 15% that are going to change that flock. Well, guess what? We have 85% that are waiting for that change to happen before they go. And that's right. That critical mass that Ross, Ben, and you were just speaking on earlier, that we need to increase that quickening to that critical mass, where we, as a one, a larger case, or uppercase S self, instead of the lowercase S self that we're in now, and realize that that is the betterment that we need to be focusing on. And more and more people, once we get to awaken to that, and I think that, you know, conscience and the conscious mind, they're both missing. And when you watch that TV, guess what's missing? That conscious mind. So it all gets imprinted.
It's going right into the subconscious.
That's right. And just like within what happens in the mind happens in the real world. And that's what we're seeing missing in the real world as well, the conscience. And so we need to stay away from the TV and the daily programming and point out the memetics and all that stuff, and just encourage more and more people to seek out knowledge. And
without a doubt. I mean, you know, my take is what I would say a bit less elitist when it comes to the dissemination of this knowledge. I'm more of an egalitarian when it comes to knowledge. And you could say, oh, well, you know, it's like trying to teach calculus to a dog, you know. Right. And in some ways, hey, it may be. But I think the great work is continuing to put information out there for whoever can receive it, and not try to make that judgment about who is or is not capable of it.
Right.
Even if it appears that they're really hard-headed and ignorant and don't want it, you never know what kind of a seed will be planted.
That's right.
And when it will sprout, you know, or how it will come about sprouting. So, you know, you can't just gauge the landscape and say, I don't think that's fertile soil, and so I'm just going to hold these seeds and I'm not going to sow them. That's never been my personal approach, which very distinctly differs from a lot of hermetic teachings and teachings of what you might call the Western mystery traditions. I disagree with that aspect of those so-called mystery schools or, you know, mystery traditions. This is where I would, you know, look at myself as far less of an occultist and look at myself as a de-occultist. Mm. These people have, you know, stored value or looked at there as being value in the continued occultation of that knowledge for the few, the elect, you know, whatever you want to call them, you know, and holding it back from the so-called profane. That's not our decision to make. You know, if you're a servant of truth, then you're going to put the truth out there for its own sake, because it stands on its own. It is what it is. It's never going to be It's never capable of being destroyed. It cannot be destroyed. It's going to be here long after we are not here anymore in the physical domain. And it's not our decision to say, this isn't for certain people, you know, and this is. You know, I'm putting out there what I know, what I understand, what I have come to learn, that I feel other people need to also understand. If it's related to human freedom, then I'm going to speak about it regardless of who I think can or cannot understand it or is ready for it or not ready for it. And there are some things people may not be ready for. But, you know, once again, you have to plant the seed and just give it, you know, some time to take root. And that's my approach. It's like I said, it's a little bit more egalitarian when it comes to knowledge, especially knowledge that some people would view as extremely esoteric or even difficult for the masses to grasp. I'm going to speak it anyway.
Right. Well, and I think that is knowing when to back off too, you know, and just being like, okay, I've said it. And we have both, you know, and that's where treading carefully or, you know, leaving that information, you're still planting those seeds.
Sure.
But leaving them, you know, just like every plant doesn't grow at the same rate,
Right. And it doesn't always have to be a direct one-on-one confrontation, like doing something like this where we're recording.
And letting people stumble upon it at their leisure.
Exactly.
And same thing with you. When I was listening to your podcast out on my tractor, you know, and that's all I did every day when I was working. And I'm like, no kidding. And then I go and double check and I'm like, wow, man, this is so cool. And probably the biggest podcast that made my had an influence on me, Mark, were of course Jay Parker, and then just getting into esoteric teachings. And then I was a big fan of the Resonance Project and Nassim Harriman, and that's how I found you. Was a student at that gathering. How about you, Patty? What were some of the podcasts that you remember of Mark's?
Some of my favorite ones were, gosh, I really like the one on cosmic abandonment. And then his whole series on Carnism. Say his, and Mark's right here with us. Mark's, but, Carnism was a good one because I came into this as a vegan and I still am one. And it is that, you know, spreading that authority, that illusion of authority, not only to humans, but it's an illusion over all of life. So those are some of my favorites.
Well, and that's where I, you know, with dog training, you know, where that woke me up too, you know, with methodologies and with, you know, if these animals, if they choose to live with you and if they choose to be, if we structure an environment where these dogs, and for many thousands of years they have been with us, and so it's actually scientifically proven that these dogs are kind of codependent with us, and us as being higher consciousness, it is our moral obligation to be stewards of these animals. And when I heard Marx talks about Carnism and imprinting the morphic field, it just blew me away. So Mark, how can people find you, and what are you up to? And I know you're kind of taking a little hiatus, but...
Yes. Of course, my main website is whatonearthishappening.com. And, of course, I always recommend people to go to the podcast section and listen to all of the podcasts in order, starting with number one and not skipping around, listening to them from number one all the way through. At your own pace, at your own convenience. You don't have to rush. Take it at your own pace, what you're comfortable with. And... right now, yes, I'm on a hiatus from podcasting, from doing a live radio show. It will not last, you know, an extremely long amount of time, but I'm probably going to continue to take at least a couple more months off because, you know, I'm going through a little bit of a rocky, difficult time right now. But also, I just really want to reevaluate some things regarding, you know, how I present and my style, and just kind of recharge a little bit. And part of how I'm doing that also is through making music in my personal life. So it's another project that I'm working on as well. People will hear more about it as, you know, it manifests. But it's kind of like, again, what we talked about with art. You know, there's so many additional ways of reaching people's mind. And I think doing it through artistic means is one of the most powerful. You know, doing that through live performance is something that I've always been involved in. And I am going to make it a deeper part of my daily life. So that's, you know, other reasons for the hiatus. But future projects are definitely going to involve more presentations. I'm going to maybe put out some more videos, just, you know, without even doing live presentations, just similar to how I did the New Age bullshit presentation from North Carolina. It was in, I'm trying to think of the name of the city, Asheville. In Asheville, North Carolina, where you're just seeing the slideshow presentation in the video and hearing my voice in the background. I feel like that's an effective method of teaching as far as I'm concerned, because it kind of removes the presenter and, the presenter isn't as much of a distraction, quote unquote. A lot of people like to focus on different things about the presenter instead of actually just listening to the material. And, you know, giving them a slideshow has them focus on the information while you're explaining the information. And it's a technique that I kind of, you know, like employing. So some future information that I put out may be done in that format. That's kind of right now what I'm working on. I have started editing a book. That's going pretty slowly right now. I do still intend to put out a full book, a debut book, in the very near future. I'm not going to give a timeline on that right now, but it's also something I'm working on in the near future. And I would also like to get back into live presenting in different areas. I am going to be presenting, I'll just mention, I don't have exact information right now, but I'll be presenting again in New England, around in Connecticut, in somewhere around early October, most likely. You'll hear more about that. Information will be forthcoming about that on my website. But that's generally what I'm up to right now. So, you know, right now it's kind of like a rest and recharge situation for me, and dealing with some personal issues that are taking place, and, you know, moving in a slightly different direction as far as the focus and presentation style of some of my teachings go. And I just recommend people to stay tuned at the whatonearthishappening.com website for more information. When I put out anything new, you'll find it first there.
Awesome, man.
Okay, thank you.
Well, and dude, thank you so much for joining us today and taking the time to spend with us. And I just appreciate you, Mark, and I can't wait to have you out here in Seattle. And just so you know, man, I got an extra room here at my house. You're welcome anytime, dude. So
it's a good thing to know, and I really appreciate hospitality like that. And guys and Patty, I just think that what you guys are doing is phenomenal. I commend your efforts. I think you're doing a great job. And just keep up the great work and be persistent and stand in the spirit of truth. And that'll be our mechanism of defense and our mechanism of strengthening our spiritual selves. So keep it up, and thanks so much.
Of course. And number 23,
thank you, Mark.
Let's talk about number 23 since we're about ready to sure. sign off here, and yeah. this is the 23rd podcast. So
real quick, I asked when you asked if I wanted to be part of the Free Your Mind podcast. I said absolutely, but could you bring me on podcast 23 symbolically? 23 is the number in the thalamic system of occultism that represents getting out of mind control, freeing the mind. The number 23. Get out, you know. Wow. So what show could have possibly been more appropriate than the 23rd podcast? So perfect. I really appreciate you saving this one for me, guys.
You bet. If there's yeah. any more in the future, just let me know. Yeah. Dude, and you got
definitely
it.
Love to have you on again in the future.
Bring me on the 93rd one.
Well, I already had that one saved yeah. for you. and the way we're going, man, you're gonna be on pretty soon.
Sounds good.
All right, Mark, thank you, and thank you, everybody,
thank
for
you
listening.
Thank you for listening to the podcast.
Yeah, Free Your Mind, number 23.
And thank you all.
We love you, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.